We're doing birthday shout-outs to David Bowie, who turns 67 today. This is The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silman. I'm Ross Reynolds. 50 years ago, a third of workers in the U.S. carried union cards in their wallets. Now it's barely 1 in 10. Andy Stern was president of one union that bucked that trend. The Service Employees International successfully organized low-income service workers, people like janitors and nurses and home health care aides. Many are Black, Asian, or Latino. Stern announced back in 2010 he'd be stepping down as president of the SEIU. He's currently a senior fellow at Columbia University. He was in town yesterday, and I spoke to Andy Stern about the $15 an hour minimum wage and how he views the dramatic move to take the SEIU out of the AFL-CIO 9 years ago. But we started out by talking about Boeing and the narrowly approved contract extension that gives up some pension benefits. Some say this vote signifies a sea change.
Well, I don't think it signifies a sea change. I think it signifies a continuation of a dramatic change that we're having in the economy where corporate profits can be substantial, you know, where the stock market can go up, and we can have jobless growth, and that companies with a lot of economic power are now in a position, you know, to really use that power to leverage politicians and workers to get what they want. And I just think it's an unfortunate America where we're debating unemployment insurance extensions on one hand and extracting billions of dollars of concessions from corporations on the other.
You've got a national perspective. Does this vote by the machinists mean anything for other kind of big labor agreements that might be coming up in other parts of the country and other sectors?
I think we've seen in successful companies like Caterpillar before this and now Boeing and many others that, you know, capital has power right now, not labor, that the ability to sort of operate globally, technological innovation are all making it harder and harder for workers, you know, to use their power to change their lives. And I think companies are in a great position for themselves and their stockholders, but not for the American community.
Voters in SeaTac approved a $15 an hour minimum wage. The $15 an hour minimum wage has been a rallying cry for fast food workers around the country. And today, Seattle Mayor Ed Murray's task force meets to begin looking at crafting a $15 an hour minimum wage for Seattle. What would it mean if a major American city like Seattle took the step?
I mean, I think it's extraordinary what was done here. And I think it really is kind of the canary in the coal mine or the bellwether going forward. Because I think people understand that you can work really hard in this economy and not get ahead. And that unless we find some ways to raise the floor for people that work, you know, we are going to have an economy where people work hard and just can't live the American dream. And so I hope that people in Seattle understand what an inspiration this was to our country.
Some businesses don't pay $15 an hour, but they do provide health care. They sometimes provide education benefits, sometimes even profit sharing. Should they be required to pay $15 an hour just like other businesses that provide none of those benefits?
I think that's a terrific discussion. And when we get to that level of detail, I think we'll be fine because I think the question really is, you know, what's the expectation for someone who goes to work to be able to get ahead? And I think in the federal government, when we look at Service Contract Act and other procurement, we do look at, you know, a whole range of potential benefits. And I think that's the right discussion to have, you know, but in the end, people do need health care and they do need a wage that they can raise their family on.
I mean, the rallying cry is $15 an hour, but you think there's other ways to look at it in terms of total compensation?
I think for the people who are the proponents of the $15 an hour, and I certainly am one, you know, that's a discussion well worth having.
One other criticism of this $15 an hour minimum wage is that businesses won't hire as many workers. What do you think about that criticism?
Well, I think that criticism is enduring, that every time the minimum wage goes up, I think $15 is going to be an experiment. We're going to see that. I hope we don't have a Boeing-type blackmail situation where employers are encouraged by their associations not to hire people to prove, you know, that the situation doesn't work. But I think, you know, people will continue in SeaTac to buy these goods. I think, you know, they can be built into the pricing structure. And I think that people that say that have absolutely no reason to say that. But on the other hand, we do know that $15 an hour in a worker's pocket is going to change their lives.
Should some businesses be exempt from a $15 an hour minimum wage because maybe they're too small?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I don't really know enough about the details, particularly in the SeaTac area. But I think we should just start by presuming that if you're in business, you can pay $15 an hour, that you can figure out a way to survive. And I hope that we all encourage people to shop and use the small businesses that are, you know, part of the experiment.
It was almost 9 years ago that you took your union, the Service Employees International, out of the country's largest labor coalition, the AFL-CIO, in a disagreement over what unions should be doing. What was that disagreement? And now, 9 years later, what does the experience say about who was right?
I think the experience says that changing the structure of the labor movement, you know, in any state or federally is really not the answer to the problem. The question of jobs and income is now so much clearly larger than whether there's an AFL-CIO and a Change to Win. And it really is, do we have policies like we have in SeaTac? Do we have a new retirement system? Do we have health care for everyone, which at least Obamacare is trying to aspire to be? And that the labor movement then and now still needs to be the voice for all workers, not just a special interest for its own members.
How about within the union, though? I mean, unions take different strategies. As head of the SEIU, you were aggressively trying to get new people into the tent, and it seemed as though that was one of the reasons you didn't find the AFL-CIO to be as effective as you wanted it to be. What do you think about that strategy?
Well, I still think there's an absolute need to organize people. I think the discussion that people like David Roth is leading here in Seattle is organize them into what? You know, is it into advocacy for minimum wage? Is it into a new retirement system? Or is it into a union? Or are all those choices? And I think, you know, right now we need to have a range of opportunities for workers to exert power. We saw that whether it's fast food or Boeing at both ends of the wage spectrum. And I think this discussion is not as prevalent as it needs to be in the labor movement because the old 20th century model is just not being successful.
It's interesting here in Seattle that some of our biggest businesses like Boeing are highly unionized, but some of the other newer businesses, the big tech businesses like Microsoft and Amazon, are not unionized. As a former union leader, how do you look at this dilemma for labor moving forward? How do they get people in these new growth businesses with high wages to become part of collective bargaining?
Well, I think the question is, how do they raise the wages and improve the benefits of people in the places like Amazon? And I'm not sure collective bargaining is the best or the only way that needs to be done. And I think one of the questions we face, you know, as a labor movement is, unfortunately, the only way we get revenue is by getting members into collective bargaining organizations. And yet some of our most effective tactics, as we saw at SeaTac, is not by collective bargaining, but it's actually by public advocacy. It's by corporate accountability. It's by, you know, boycotting the brand. And so I think we need to figure out how we marry the future labor movement's ability to have revenues to hold corporations accountable and at the same time still have collective bargaining, but not as its exclusive role.
What will labor's role be in the mid-year elections coming up, which could play a crucial role in the makeup of Congress and on many of these labor issues we're discussing?
Well, I think because there's so many governor's elections in 2014 around the country, and so many of our members are focused because of Wisconsin and Michigan and other activities that have taken place that have been not helpful to workers, you know, on the governor's races. I think Congress continues to be a very, you know, questionable place to make change just because of the way the districts are drawn and kind of people's disgust with politics. And I think the Senate is always an important place for people to put their time. But I think you'll see a lot of time spent on governors.
That's Andy Stern. He was president of the Service Employees International Union. Now he's a senior fellow at Columbia University. I'm Ross Reynolds.